Hi, welcome to Jazz Rhythm, an exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. I'm Dave Radlauer, bringing you the third in a series, The Saga of Jelly Roll Morton. And this hour, we'll be focusing on his life, music, and declining fortunes during the 1930s. Morton had a major role in shaping early jazz during a career that stretched from the early days of New Orleans around the year 1900 until his death in 1941. And he created hundreds of brilliant original tunes and compositions. This is a fine performance by Butch Thompson of Jelly Roll's Wine and Boy Blues, one of his most characteristic tunes. Wine and Boy, an excellent performance by Butch Thompson, who's one of the greatest living Morton stylists, and we'll hear more from him later this hour. And as is so often the case with Morton, yes, Wine and Boy has sexual connotations. It was a bawdy nickname from his days playing piano in the red light district of New Orleans, Winding Boy meaning a tireless lover or stag. In his songs, it's not unusual for Morton to mythologize himself, who's doing it all the time, or celebrating some of the legendary entertainers, studs, thugs, criminals, and odd characters he'd known. This is the third of four programs tracing the saga of Jelly Roll Morton on the award-winning Jazz Rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me. This hour, you'll hear about Morton's declining fortunes during the 1930s, his near destruction, rediscovery, and barely noted passing. A precocious Creole youth, Morton was playing piano in New Orleans bordellos by his early teens around the year 1900. And beginning around 1910, he traveled the country, always on the make, on the go, on the hustle. And in the early days, he probably made most of his income on the wrong side of the law, pimping, pool hustling, and gambling, along with a little bit of vaudeville and medicine show work. He carried a large money roll, was always full of big talk, dressed in the sharpest suits, frequently accompanied by several women, and did I mention he had a half-carat diamond discreetly mounted in a gold front tooth? After riding high in the music business through the 1920s, Morton's fortunes declined sharply during the 30s. Victor Records, for whom he'd made several dozen popular, landmark recordings, abruptly ended his contract in 1930. Morton was not to appear on record under his own name again for nearly a decade. He was double-crossed by music publishing big wheel Walter Melrose. For years, he'd been Jelly's publisher and liaison with Victor Records. But in 1930, Melrose found a pretext to withhold Morton's royalty income. This badly hurt Jelly financially, but it must have hurt him emotionally as well because he loudly complained about it to the end of his days. Morton's music rapidly fell out of fashion as he was quickly eclipsed by newly ascending styles and stars. And Morton himself fell out of fashion. His belligerent big talk, criticism of other musicians, and generally aggressive manner had alienated others beyond repair. The role, as he preferred to be addressed, gradually slipped into irrelevance and hard times, watching royalties, record sales, and choice gigs slipping away from him. Continually declaring he was just around the corner from a big comeback, Morton pursued many failed ventures, and at this time believed himself under a voodoo curse. Despite some success on the road in places like Pennsylvania, upstate New York, and around Chicago, Morton slowly declined into obscurity and within a few years, poverty. Here's Pontchartrain, named of course for the large saltwater lake just north of New Orleans, which back in the day was an important gathering place. South Frisco jazz band capture well Jelly Roll's powerful rhythmic drive, dynamic, tonal, and rhythmic contrast, and clever melodic writing like lightning in a bottle. Then we'll segue to the 1930 Morton recording of Pontchartrain. Ponchatrain. We first heard a terrific live performance by South Frisco Jazz Band, then Jelly Roll Morton's Red Hot Peppers in a lineup that was unusual for the presence of trumpeter Bubber Miley, who was soon to be much better known for the records of his next employer, Duke Ellington. Also in the session were trombonist Wilbur DeParis and the Benford brothers, Bill and Tommy, on bass and drums. They were excellent musicians who worked quite a lot with Jelly, and incidentally, drummer Tommy Benford lived a long, productive life and was friend to a friend of mine, soprano saxophonist Stan McDonald. And by the way, if we play the 6 degrees of separation game, I find that I'm no more than 2 or 3 degrees of separation from Morton myself, because I once interviewed Doc Cheatham, who knew and worked with the great man himself. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. I hope you're enjoying hearing Jelly Roll Morton's story as much as I'm enjoying telling it. If you want to find out more about Morton or you missed earlier programs in the saga, just go to the Jazz Rhythm website, www.jazzhotbigstep.com. Jelly Roll Morton was a remarkable jazz pioneer. By 1920, he had already performed in New York City, Chicago, St. Louis, and on the West Coast in San Francisco, Tijuana, Mexico, and Los Angeles. And he was one of the first non-white American composers to successfully publish sheet music and cut piano rolls as early as 1915. And he recorded the first year that jazz began to appear on disc, 1923. Many of Morton's significant first-time precedents went unnoticed in the 20s. He was first to use brushes on drums instead of drumsticks, to make successful recordings with small jazz combos, duets, trios and quartets a decade before Goodman, and like Benny Goodman, crossed the segregated color barrier enforced in the music industry early on, recording on a small label with the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, who were fine young white jazz musicians, also from New Orleans. And these landmarks were not widely noted until much, much later. Here's a little of his London Blues, Jelly with the New Orleans Rhythm Kings in 1923. outstanding musicians playing Morton's London Blues. British clarinetist Wally Fox, clarinet, Butch Thompson, piano, and drummer Pom Pamir in a trio, reminding us that Jelly Roll Morton was the first to record a jazz trio back in the 1920s and the first to use brushes on drums on disc. I'm Dave Radlauer bringing you the saga of Jelly Roll Morton on Jazz Rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz, old and new. Since Morton's passing in 1941, a great deal of scholarship, both professional and amateur, has gone into researching, detailing, and documenting Morton's life and music. And quite frankly, much of the early research and commentary on Morton has had to be revised or even undone in light of recent revelations. Serious Morton studies really begin with Alan Lomax, who was a folklorist collecting music and oral histories for the Library of Congress Archive of Folk Song. In 1938, he encountered Morton in the crummy Washington Dive, where he was then playing and barely surviving. Lomax quickly grasped Morton's significance. And during a couple of months in mid-1938, Lomax interviewed and recorded Morton exhaustively on about 50 acetate discs covering some 75 tunes and tales. Those interviews were the basis for Lomax's biography of Morton. Published in 1949, Mr. Jelly Lord, which added some attempted corroborating interviews and research, was seriously flawed. In the first place, during his recordings, Lomax had eagerly solicited from Morton many salacious and smutty songs from Jelly Roll's days in the bawdy houses of New Orleans. Lomax thereby forever soiled our perception of Morton as a man obsessed with crude sexual metaphor. Not that he wasn't, of course. But I'm afraid Alan Lomax was a little too close to his subject and perhaps bedazzled by Morton's self-promoting pimp, hustler, piano man legend. Plus, Lomax was a folk music scholar. He had no real background in jazz research, which itself was still in infancy. Unquestionably, the most important Morton researcher was a man named William Russell. Russell was a classically trained musician who became deeply interested in jazz and Morton in particular. He befriended Morton in the late 30s, and after his death spent the next half century studying and collecting everything he could find related to Morton. Russell searched for every document, recording, genealogical record, manuscript, letter, photo, or fact he could find, and compiled a vast collection, conducting hundreds of interviews with anyone who had known Morton, played music with him, or even had a passing encounter. Amazingly, Russell privately acquired and warehoused this huge, eclectic treasure quietly, almost in secret, until after his death in 1994, when an overview of this archive was posthumously published in a 700-page tome called Oh, Mr. Jelly. And without a doubt, this now well-preserved archive has provided enough data to significantly revise our perspectives of Morton. More recently, Morton studies have focused on corroborating his various statements and claims, continuing analysis of his Library of Congress music and monologues, and textual analysis of his music. That is, a deeper focus on the musical artifacts themselves, which reveal just how original and cleverly constructed is the music of Jelly Roll Morton. The Crave is haunting and memorable. It's a Morton original dating back to his youth playing piano in Storyville Bordellos. And it's a clear case where Jelly Roll is presenting what he called the Spanish tinge, Caribbean and Latin American tango and habanera rhythms that, oddly, he alone thought a very important feature of jazz. This is a tour de force showcase of Morton's signature techniques, rhapsodic melodies, restless chromatic shifts from major to minor, and intriguing dissonance. It's bristling with relentless syncopation, off-the-beat accents, and unexpected silences. The Crave is one of Jelly Roll Morton's most characteristic piano masterpieces, played here by Butch Thompson and by Morton. Thank you. This is Butch Thompson, among our finest living Morton interpreters. You might recall that Butch Thompson was heard regularly on Prairie Home Companion way back, long time ago. And we heard Butch's superb rendition of Jelly's tune, The Crave, and we're hearing Creepy Feeling. And like several of Morton's best tunes, was only published after his 1941 passing. You can discover the worldwide network of Morton-related jazz sites and online archives, or hear more music and programs at the Jazz Rhythm website, jazzhotbigstep.com. I'm Dave Redlauer. Thanks for joining me for the saga of Jelly Roll Morton.